Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Men podcast. This is episode number 35. I am here with someone that is a huge honor to be with, Ryan Hawk, who's a speaker, author, podcast host. And I was joking with him before we started recording that, you know, looking at his resume, his background, and podcast acumen, I'm not sure I'm qualified to do this, but you know, we'll make the most of it. So I appreciate him taking the time to do it. Ryan, thanks so much for, again, taking the time to do this. I'm excited to get to know you. Leadership is kind of your thing. I know you do podcasts on leadership. You've written some books on leadership, keynote speaking. So hey, give us more, a little bit of a background on what it is you do, and then we can talk about pretty much anything you want to talk about in terms of leadership and that kind of thing.
Well, thanks, Kevin. Appreciate you having me, man. My focus, I think my purpose is to inspire other people to both value and pursue excellence. Some of the ways I do that is speaking with people far wiser than me, trying to approach them with genuine curiosity, to push my edges intellectually and have conversations with them, ask them questions that I'm most curious about, hopefully be a good listener, ask better follow-up questions. And I started recording those conversations 8.5 years ago. And now I've had, as you mentioned, 550 plus of them for my podcast, The Learning Leader Show. And it's definitely been the most life-changing thing I've ever done. It's created a lot of amazing opportunities, the great relationships. And it's my favorite thing to do, to have a deep, long-form conversation with a person who has lived an exceptional life and continues to do so, and that they have an understanding for why, and they tell good stories, and they're kind and giving and want to help other people. And I like being around people like that. I try to be one of those, struggle at times, but that's what I'm trying to do. That's how I spend a lot of days, quietly reading and preparing for podcasts, then recording them, then thinking about them, then analyzing transcripts and talking with people who, are good at this to give me feedback. And I've stumbled into the fact that, if you do that for a while and you stay consistent and you ship your work and it's useful, it seems to make other people want more. And so I've built my business off the back of the podcast, written books, giving speeches, work with leadership teams from all over the world in an advising capacity. We do workshops, we do trainings, we do all different types of stuff. I get to partner with people who I deeply admire to help me with a lot of these activities. And it's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. I feel very grateful. And I think the reward for me is that I just get to keep doing it day after day after day. So I try to do it really well. And that gives me a chance for people to continue to want me to do it. And here we are. So I, again, appreciate you having me. We could probably take that in a lot of different directions, but that's, I guess, as quick as I can get to it.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely got time to explore whatever we need to, but it's, you know, 8.5 years from a podcasting standpoint. I mean, that's like, was there any, even something they were barely calling it a podcast back at that point, right? Like that's a long time, and kind of to be on the forefront of that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I was a podcast listener. There weren't as many, but I listened to my friend Todd Henry, who lives down the road from me here in Cincinnati, Ohio, the Accidental Creative, and I think he's amazing. He's been a great friend and mentor. I listened to Bill Simmons and Joe Rogan and all those guys who've been around for more than a decade. And Brian Koppelman is another interviewer who I think is amazing and world class. I've been fortunate to go hang out with him in New York and record with him too. So I was an avid listener of podcasts, even though there were far fewer choices. But I also had done tons of interviews during my day job. I was both initially a sales rep and then a sales manager, and then ultimately was in a role where not only was I hiring for my own team, but I was helping the hiring for many of our teams. And so I was in a regular state of asking people questions, of trying to get to know them, of trying to then make decisions of should we bring them to our business. I worked for a company called LexisNexis. And so I was getting a lot of repetitions before I officially started recording. So the combination of my curiosity to learn about people, the fact that I'd gotten repetitions, the fact that I just finished getting my MBA. It took me 6 years. I did it at night. I did it in between working, all of that stuff. Taking exams, you know, with young kids. It was wild. But I think what happened though was after I finished and my company reimbursed me for to get my MBA, and they had this money out there that they would reimburse you to keep learning. And I thought it was a waste not to use it. And so I actually considered going back to school again to get another graduate degree because I had that money there for my company to use and didn't want to waste it. But I didn't love the whole process of getting my MBA. I didn't get to choose my teachers. I didn't get to choose my classes. I had to go through a curriculum that they set for me to get that certificate at the end of it. And my hope was, is there a way I could create my own form of a leadership PhD program? I'm most curious about leadership, about building great teams, about moving people, about inspiring them to achieve big results. And so I thought, well, what if I chose my own professors? What if I asked them exactly what I want to ask them? And then I could publish those conversations that maybe others could learn along with me. Who knows? Maybe we could create a community of learning leaders. And you know, I could have never necessarily envisioned. I don't really set big or long-term goals. I just try to focus on the daily actions and being consistent. And doing so then led to like we've talked about, these really neat opportunities that I'm trying to soak them all up and keep at it. So that's really my motivation to keep trying to get better at this, is because it just creates a lot of amazing opportunities for me to do some fun work with great people.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's kind of this narrative now. I listen to a lot of micro, right? Micro is the, and in my world, because of what my wife has done and because of we're big in the automotive space, we around a lot of tradespeople. So like the big, there's a bit of this, not animosity, but a discussion between formal, quote unquote, higher learning versus the trades. And it kind of goes into what you're saying a little bit. So your motivation to go get your MBA was that, you know, you wanted to learn and it was paid for, which also helps. But out of that, you're saying that, you know, you kind of wanted to create your own curriculum and you didn't really get everything that you need. Now, did you find that time valuable? And like, is that something that you use daily? I don't have an MBA.
Getting my MBA?
Yeah, your MBA. I mean, I don't have an MBA. I have a bachelor's degree, a couple of bachelor's degrees.
My undergrad's in communications, so I needed to be more well-rounded to build out my career. I mean, I was in corporate America, and so I was working with Ivy League MBAs who were telling me, you got to go back to school to be more well-rounded if you want to build a career. So I started the program for probably the wrong reasons. I didn't start it because I was curious to learn. I started it because I wanted the graduate degree. I wanted my MBA. And I actually kind of approached it that way, which is not, you know, I probably have just matured a lot later than most people. I didn't really like school. Mm-hmm. I didn't read many books. I wasn't that curious. I played football. And so all I was focused on was being the best quarterback I could possibly be. I went to school because I had to. I still got decent grades, but I didn't really apply a ton of my effort there. I applied all of my effort in the weight room, in the meeting rooms, on the practice field, and certainly on game days on Saturdays. So after college, I still was thinking, I mean, I played in the Arena League and went up to the CFL. So I was still thinking about football. I didn't really think about work. And when I got that advice, hey, just go get your MBA, it could help you. It was really about the result. It wasn't about the learning along the way. The cool thing about my podcast is like, there is no result or there's no big goal I'm seeking. I just do it because I love to do it. Mm-hmm. The win is that I get to do it. So there isn't really any more winning beyond that. Now, like I said, it's created really cool opportunities to meet amazing people, which is awesome. But there's no like end game. It's just what I want to do. And to me, that's like the most amazing reward, is that I get to keep doing the thing that I am most curious and passionate about. And I realize not everybody gets to do that. So I try not to take it for granted and approach it by working really hard and being overly prepared so that I keep adding value to people's lives. That's why they listen. And so my plan is just to really keep doing that. And that's not always that fun, because some people set these really great strategic plans and have long-term goals. And maybe I should do that. Maybe I need to get better at that. But as of now, I haven't really done that.
Well, I mean, it sounds like there you have a fulfilling life at right. The, you know, I mean, the fulfillment, I was on a podcast last night and we're talking in particular about fatherhood and marriage and those kind of things. But we were talking about this dichotomy of for men between work and life and family and all these things. And I used a phrase that I try to use a lot, which is my goal is to use what I do for a living, to build a life, not the other way, not use my life to build companies. I have a bunch of different brands and do some different things as an entrepreneur, but like, that's what it sounds like you're doing. So this whole pressure of, hey, I got to have this goal and I got to meet this person, I got to take it to this level. And I think that's what a lot of men and especially get kind of trapped in.
Yeah, it's, but I get it. I mean, the biggest piece of advice I get from a lot of people who maybe don't think about it enough is follow your passion. And I understand. I think you got to bring passion and love and curiosity to what you're doing in order to get world class at it. But there's also like most of us, we need to pay the bills. Like we need to create a financially secure home for our families. Like that's really a big priority for most guys and for most just leaders and people in general. So that's why I said I feel very fortunate to be able to, the fact that the world seems to want and need the thing that I love doing the most. I know for a lot of people that does not necessarily align. So there's honor in hard work. There's honor in paying the bills. There's honor in supporting and being there for your family. I don't think you have to necessarily like find the thing that you're most passionate about and then that's the thing. Some people try that. They don't make any money. Yeah. Right, like Chris Rock's joke, he's like, "Yeah, it's great to follow your passion as long as they're hiring." I mean, there's a lot to it. So in a way, like I admire in people who go earn a good, hard, honest paycheck to support their family, even if they don't love the job. Now, hopefully, they have hobbies. Hopefully, they have things to fulfill them. Hopefully, maybe they get there and they find that so that they feel really good. But no, I had a sales job, and did I love the product I was selling or love the people I was selling to? Not necessarily. I grew a love for the work. Mm-hmm. I grew a love for my teammates. I grew a love for the people that I worked with, for the people that I then eventually led. I didn't necessarily like have this deep passion for the product or my company. Like I liked it. I was grateful for them, but I had like a deep passion and love for doing great work, for showing up for my teammates, for us performing. All of those things were deeply fulfilling and enriching. So I think you can have it in just other ways. I just, again, feel fortunate to be able to do the thing that, like, if they said, like, you don't have to make any money, you don't have to do anything, what would you do? I would be doing this. So I feel pretty fortunate to be in that position to be doing the thing that I would want to do if I didn't need to make another dollar in my life.
That's pretty, I mean, that's what a fortunate place to be. Cause there's a, you know, even with this small little, you know, and this is not a money generating thing for me necessarily yet. I'm hoping at some point, maybe it, you know, will, but there's an altruistic approach for me. I'm 50, successful marriage, relatively successful business wise. And I sought out to try to help other men. And our little tagline is to be who you were made to be, right? Like that's, and it feels like the same for you. There's this altruism to say, hey, I really want to interview people for my own curiosity and edification, but then share that with the world so that, you know, everybody else gets to join along with it. And in the meantime, have some amazing conversations.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what, that's the cool thing about podcasts is the fact that it creates an opportunity to meet interesting people and to ask them what you're most curious about and to develop great communication skill and build relationships. I mean, it's pretty much all upside, regardless mm-hmm. of any of the financial impacts that you have. I mean, even if you don't make money on it, there's still huge winnings and takeaways from doing something like this, from having the guts to reach out cold and ask people to be on and then have those prepare for those conversations and have those conversations and then publish them so that others can judge you and maybe make fun of you. Like all of that, I think there's a lot of upside for having the guts to do it and then to continue on even as it gets hard or continue on even when you have a million other things going on in your life. I think that's a huge win in itself. So when people come to me and ask like if I can help them start a podcast, like those are some of the questions I ask. Why are you doing it? Why do you want to do it? And if they say something along the lines, well, I hope to create like a marketing channel so that it can shine a light on my business and help me like earn more clients or make money or give keynote speeches, you know, I'm a little concerned that they're going to be able to withstand some of the tough elements of it. Everyone's excited at the start, but then, you know, people slow down and it gets tougher and they're not seeing the results they want and they stop, as opposed to the person who says, I'm curious about people and their stories and find them fascinating. And I want to have those conversations. I'm going to record them and I'm going to share them with others so they can listen and maybe learn along with me. When they have that motivation, I think the chances of it sustaining and lasting over time go way up, because the win, again, is the doing of the thing versus some sort of result that you do not have control over. You have complete control over who you're going to cold email, how hard you prepare, the conversations you have, the quality of those things, and then publishing all of them. You have control over all of that. You don't have control over the results. So if you love the process part of it and you're able to divorce the results element, I think you have a good shot of the results ending up being really good, because you'll last, right? You'll be able to endure versus the ones who are just seeking some sort of result out of it.
Yeah. With this podcast in particular, I love that kind of ideology, because it, like, I started this out, I'm thinking, hey, I want to help men. I want to do courses and coaching and all of these things and kind of figure this out. And I'd love to do a podcast. And, you know, I fully expected it to suck at first, which it probably did. I'm only 35 episodes in, but being able to have these conversations, and we've kind of run in on the automotive side in our lives, we kind of run in some circles that oftentimes, and I'm sure, you know, even in your spot, you may have had this thought, like, are they going to figure out that I have no business being in this room, like, at some point, and kick me out? But the people I've had an opportunity to talk with, even if they're not, you know, A-level celebrities or, you know, super high-level business people, all in all, have been so interesting to me to be able to talk to, you know, a friend of mine who's a 92-year-old former pastor, to talk about his life. And then to talk to a younger guy in Poland about sex education for men, and, you know, all of these, because we're so widely varied, right? Like, we have those conversations. But yeah, the side bonus, as my wife tells me, I'm like, you have become such a better listener. Yeah. As a result of doing these huge podcasts.
Win. That's a huge win.
It's a huge win.
But yeah, that impacts you in a great way, both with her as well as others in your life.
Right. 100%. Yeah. So when you seek out to reach out to guests, do you have a particular methodology, or not methodology, but, like, are you saying, okay, Alex Ramosi or some guy, person like that, there are certain things that I know about him and what he does, but I'm seeking out to get additional information? Like, what's your kind of thought process? Because obviously Alex has a public persona that he's, you know, very well cultivated and all, and those kind of things. But at the end of the day, he's just a guy trying to run a successful business and have a successful marriage, right?
So are you asking, like, why I reach out to him in specific?
Yeah, I'm curious what your thought process as you prepare and begin to talk to him and the questions you ask, and, you know, because you don't want to just be like, well, hey, tell me about $100 million leads. Tell me about, you know, those things, right?
Yeah, well, so for that one in particular, I remember sent many cold emails over the past, 6 months, and then got a response and said he wanted to do it, which was cool. I didn't fully realize how he had taken over the internet even when I had reached out. I was curious because I'd seen some videos, like probably most of us online, and I just dug into his story. I was curious about his upbringing. I mean, the episode we did together, he talked a lot about his dad. And the phone call he made to him when he was driving cross country, and how upset his dad was with him. And I mean, I was curious about him and how he became the guy that he is today. I think that's for most of them, is I do a ton of research. So I have an outline that's probably worthy of about a 4 or 5 hour conversation that we don't get to the majority of that. Just trying to understand people, their stories. I think the stories are what's most memorable. And so how can we, like, my speaking and writing and even podcasting style is story science, practical application. So the story engages you, grabs you, pulls you in. The science proves that it's true. It shares some of the parts that maybe are important, but are a little bit more boring than the story, but important. And then the practical application answers the questions like, so what, why should I care? Why are you talking about this? Because listeners, ultimately, they want to be entertained. They want to be informed. But I also think most of them are looking for some sort of behavior change. And I want to impress upon them some sort of behavior change, to do something that will make their life better. So anytime I'm thinking about any guest, it's understanding what are the unique and interesting stories in their life that will bring these concepts to life, that will make you remember them and that may propel you to act. And so if we get some sort of behavior change, that's a huge win. So just like a keynote speech in a podcast, very similar, I should be entertaining, I should be informative, and I should move you to act. And if I get off a stage and I didn't do all three of those things, it's a big F, it's a fail. Podcasts, same way. And so I approach my outlines, I approach my questions, I approach my follow-ups, my listening, every element of a podcast or a keynote speech the same way of being entertaining, informative, and pushing you to action. And if I do that, then I feel like it's a good one. And if not, then, you know, I'll throw the podcast in the trash and we'll never release it. And so to me, that's how I try to approach everything. And if I do that enough day after day after day, we'll probably have a pretty good business. So that's really how I try to approach things and being very thoughtful and intentional about that each and every time. And when I do, and I do it well, then things typically go well for me.
I feel like I'm getting a podcasting 101 lesson, which is amazing, which is awesome, and hopefully will improve what I'm doing. Which I say that in a good way, really my own. A lot of these conversations that I have are kind of for my own edification too. Sure. To like, hey, let me learn and let me improve and do things better. And but it's so. I want to kind of change gears a little bit because most of our audience that I talk to are, you know, men that are struggling, trying to do what they're doing, you know, to try to improve in all these different areas of life. I find it really fascinating that someone that was a quarterback who is essentially just a leader on the field, how did that impact your overall understanding of leadership? I'm curious about that. I'm also curious about like what your home situation was in terms of like what your dad did to try to teach you some of those things. If, you know, assuming that dad was there doing that, because you mentioned Alex's dad, but because one of the things that we talk a lot about on this podcast and with the people that I have conversations with is this, you know, difficulty with fathers to try to teach their sons in particular, because we talk about masculinity and those kind of things, how to be men and how to be, you know, masculine in a way that's acceptable, desirable, and, you know, loving. So I'm kind of, give me a little bit more background on that story and how it might relate to, you know, being a quarterback, being on the field and turning that into leadership. And then also where you got that information and where you got that learning.
So my dad or playing quarterback, which one you want to tackle
first? Well, let's talk about your father first.
Yeah.
In terms of like, if you were, you know, how he taught you about being a man, being, you know, a leader on the field and those kind of elements of that world.
Yeah. So my dad remains the number one mentor in my life. I think, you know, as I've gotten older, I realize just how lucky I am for both my mom and my dad. I think my dad, first and foremost, what I would say about him is the fact that he's one of the most selfless people I've ever met. And his dad, my grandpa Hawk, who's also still alive, is maybe the only person who's more selfless than my dad. And then I would say the third person who is very close would be my wife, Miranda. So you could tell I'm kind of attracted to people who are in service of others. My dad showed that first and foremost by how he treats my mom. Still to this day, they have a long, loving marriage. I think it's really about him treating her with respect, with taking care of her. He's worked very hard. He provided really well for us. I'm the middle of three boys, so older brother, younger brother. I think we've all done relatively well, and I would attribute the overwhelming majority of the reason why to my mom and my dad. So he didn't have to say it. And in fact, he didn't really talk it to us much about what it means to be a man or what it means. He just lived it. So he didn't teach it. We just caught him in action every single day and still to this day. So, we didn't have a lot of those conversations. It was mainly us seeing him, show up and do work. He worked very hard until he retired. He still works hard, but now he's working on other things. But just show a respect for people. I've met so many people that my dad's worked with, and it's amazing that he's one of the few people I've found that is both deeply, deeply respected and loved. Usually you get one or the other. And it's hard to find many people who have both, where you can tell people just love them to death, but they respect them for their work as well. It's just hard to do. So I think that's first and foremost what I think about with him. And then, you know, he's just always there. And I think when you talk to people about what they want and what they value and what they've loved about their parents and what now they're trying to do as a mom or a dad is I think your presence is required. In my first book, Welcome to Management, there's a whole section just titled Your Presence is Required, P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E, right? They value your presence more than your presence. And I think it's important that we're there, we show up. And so to me as a dad, that's what I'm trying to do is show up, is to be there each day. They have sports, they have homework, they're upset, they're happy, whatever it may be, show up, be present, fully present, be all the way there. That's what my dad does, my mom does. And so I'm trying to model myself after that as well. And I'm just lucky to have an amazing model to model myself after, because I realize as I meet more and more people in the world that not everybody has that. In fact, a lot of people don't. So it's just an amazing amount of luck. And I'm just trying to make the most of that luck.
Yeah. So what did your dad do before he retired?
He led 1,000-person sales force. Okay. And so he worked his way from a customer service representative out of college to promotion over the course of 30 plus years, and worked its way all the way up from the very entry level. And I think that is very hard to do, to then be leading an organization of 1,000 people. And I watch him get up on stage and give these amazing speeches where the crowd would go nuts, and just seeing all the people respond to the way that he's just got this way about him is really cool. I mean, he still has it. It's really neat to see. He doesn't do the same things anymore, but that's what he built his career to do.
And I mean, you pointed out a great thing, which is to be loved and respected. And like you said, so many people, almost so many men kind of demand respect, but don't necessarily earn love, you know, of their peers and their subordinates and their, you know, bosses and those. So he taught you.
Or earn the respect. You can only earn respect by doing the work, right? You got to, that's not like something to give. I've had bosses who demanded respect that I didn't respect at all because they did nothing to earn it. Right. So to me, like you have to earn that every day. And so there's so many different ways to do that, by showing up, by being competent, by being overly prepared, by caring deeply for your people. Like that's a lot of work every day and it never ends. And I think that's the thing that I think people really admire about my dad most is just that, like, he was always like, I think consistency is a part of our family DNA. Like, we're going to show up, we're going to ship work, we're going to do what we need to do, we're going to be very reliable and dependable, all these unsexy terms, but very effective and useful. And I think that's another part about, like, just showing up and being there each day. It sounds, well, yeah, of course they do that. Well, no, not everybody does. They're not all dependable or reliable or available. All of that, those are all very important things on your path, like trying to do really good work and to help people and to support them. You just got to be there. And I think that's something I'd certainly try to do both in my personal life and my professional life.
So you're married, have how many kids?
We have five.
You have five kids. Wow. That's
five
awesome.
Girls. Yep.
How long have you been married?
Trick question.
trick question. I mean, that's, and again, that relationship that you saw with your parents, I had this conversation on that same podcast last night about, so I've been married for 28 years. Mm-hmm. My kids are 25. I just have two girls, 25 and 23. But I heard recently from my youngest to say that the way that you treated mom showed me how I'm supposed to be treated. Like that modeled for me that relationship. And it sounds like that your parents did the same thing, and which is leadership in and of itself, like that personal leadership showing, if I treat, you know, when you saw the way your dad treated your mom, you learned what it meant to be a husband and a father and those, right? Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you're enjoying it and learning a lot. If you're looking for extra help, don't forget that I do offer one-on-one coaching. We can talk through a ton of different issues. I can give you guides, guidelines, and logistical help to help you take that next step or go to that next level in some of the things that you're dealing with in your life. We also have some course content, some guides, and a lot of educational materials over at maxedoutman.com. For the coaching, go ahead and go to maxedoutman.com/coaching. and you can learn about that. And then just go to maxedoutman.com for everything else. Thanks for joining us. Now back to the episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's that they, whatever they do is your normal, right?
Right.
And especially until you get out in the world and you see more things. Like, that's just normal. So whatever your household was, if it was crazy and chaotic, that's normal. That's what you think is the way the world is. If it's a dad loving and doting on your mom or a husband and a wife, that's your normal. That happened to be mine. And so I think that's what I try to do now, right? Is just thinking about, what am I normalizing? What am I making? Am I yelling and being disrespectful? Well, I mean, that's the worst possible thing I could do to normalize in our home. And so it's really about showing respect and love and care and making them go, oh, stop doing that, because you're hugging and kissing and saying how much you love each other. And like, you're whatever you're doing, all those, like, all of that stuff leaves an imprint, I know. Mm-hmm. And they're watching closely, even if they act like, as they become teenagers, even if they act like they are not into that. That to me is an interesting thing to think about, that is forefront of our minds at all times.
Yeah, because those girls, I mean, my girls used to do that too. It's like, oh, I can't. And I mean, we now have a very open relationship with our girls, to the point where, like, dad, we cannot, you're not supposed to tell us these things, right? Like, it's, but not like in gross ways or whatever, but like, to be able to say, you know, your mom and I, so I had this situation where my youngest used to just pop by. She was in college here locally, and she would just show up at the house at any given time. And, you know, which is fine, except for when it's not fine. So I had to tell her, I said, look, I need you to understand that I love your mom, like, a lot, a lot. So when you show up at my house, when you just pop up to the house, you may not know what's been going on in the last hour. So they're like, oh, gross, you know. But first of all, she did start texting me like 6 times before she showed up the house. That was one result of that. But she also recognizes that someone that has been married 28 years, it's normal to have that kind of intimate relationship. Right. Yep. And to be able to show her that. And the irony is that she's been through a series of kind of bad boyfriends, but she's finally found one that treats her the way that she expected to be treated. And so that's a huge blessing for us. But it's crazy what you can model for your kids.
Yeah. It's so important, man. It's so cool to hear, though.
So when you talk about, I love this whole story about your dad and showing these things, because I think a lot of fathers, and maybe you've faced this too, a lot of fathers kind of go into this, especially young dads now or young moms, thinking, if I do XYZ, then I will get XYZ result. And so it's not about, you kind of point out, it's not about the doing. It's really about, or it's not about the to-do list. It's more about the overall ideology of your family and how you view your family, how you view your kids, and the world that you're trying to let them grow up in. Is that something you agree with?
Yeah. I mean, it's really about what you choose to do each day, how intentional you are, how thoughtful you are, how, I think being reflective and being an introspective person could be very helpful to then see how you're going to show up. I'm not a big believer in just wandering around and hoping for the best. I think it's important on us as leaders to be very reflective and thoughtful about what we've done each day, to analyze those days, to see what can I do to be better. The Charlie Munger quote's one I live by. The prompt that I push on leaders all the time is, what did I do today to be a little bit wiser going to bed than I was when I woke up? What did I do today to push my edges a little bit, to be a little uncomfortable? Who did I talk to? What physical thing did I do to push my body? Right. All of that, like, to me, it's just about, like, I want to be just a little bit better at the end of the day. And if I stack enough of those days, good things will happen. So it's not like, it doesn't have to be grand plans or these amazing things or even a ton of analysis. It's really just a few prompts, a few things to think about each day, so that tomorrow I should be a little bit better. Today should be the worst I am. You should listen to this a year from now and laugh at yourself. And be like, I'm so much better. I've had another year of repetitions at this podcast. I know I do all the time. Listen to one last year. I'm like, what was I doing? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's after doing it for 7 years. And so I think it's just, that's normal. We should look back at our past selves and probably laugh and wonder and say, oh my gosh, we should do that. If we're not, we're probably not growing, and that's not a good thing. So that's how I try to approach this. And, you know, just so hopefully by the end of the day, by the end of the week, by the end of the month, if I'm analyzing myself, I can see this kind of steady upward trajectory. So I'm getting a little bit better and just trying to stack day after day after day.
So really being reflective and not necessarily huge goal setting, but what, you know, you teach leadership, all the time and do you just employ the same leadership tactics in your family and in your daily life that you would in business, or is there kind of this split on this is what you do in business and in life, and this is what you do in, you know, your marriage, your family, your kids, or all of those kind of intertwined? In what you do.
I think it all goes together. I don't really think. I try to lead in a servant based way all the time. There's no real switch. I mean, once I'm awake, I'm awake. I'm trying to lead. I'm trying to influence. I'm trying to move people. I'm trying to help people. Trying to serve them and care for them and love them. So it doesn't. I would say there isn't really a time like, yeah, there are different ways you approach people based on your relationship to them and what's happening in the world. But for the most part, I kind of am who I am, live by a set of values, a code that doesn't turn on and off. That's just who I am. I'm trying to evolve and improve and have an open mind to always get better and be open to better ideas. When better evidence presents itself, I definitely change my mind. And I think it's just always an evolving process. But no, I wouldn't say there's much difference in me, regardless of where I go, of how I approach leadership.
Okay. Which is probably how it should be, right? We're the whole man trying to do, you know, take everything that we learn and conglomerate that into our daily lives.
It's like, if you think of it, like I've rarely met the person who is just this high integrity, caring, loving, great husband and dad who then cheats at work. Like mm-hmm. And vice versa. Like I've rarely found the guy who cheats on his wife and then doesn't kind of cut corners at work. Like, unfortunately, I've seen both sides of that. And so you are who you are. Like it would just be weird. It wouldn't be a genuine or authentic, I guess, if you did it wrong one place and then right the other place and vice versa. So to me, it's a big red flag. I had a boss like that once. It was a huge red flag on the first day I met him. I remember, and he's, you know, in a relationship and married or whatever. And then all of a sudden he's talking about why he loves being on the road and talking about women and stuff. And I thought, this is a giant red flag. You know, I just met this guy. He knows my story and my situation as a husband and a dad. And I just thought, like, oh my gosh, this is not going to end well. It didn't. It did not end well. And so usually people are pretty aligned and they kind of tell you who they are by how they choose to behave and treat people. And so, I think it's worth it just to pay attention and see how people are anywhere, because that's usually how they're going to be everywhere.
Yeah, because that I've heard it said something like integrity is what you do when no one's watching and you can't get caught.
Yeah.
And so that's what, you know, I think now in today's world, I think that integrity is something that is harder to come by, in my experience. A lot of, you know, like you said, you got people out there that on the surface, they look like they're amazing and great at this thing or successful, but at the end of the day you look at their life and their thought process, and you know, if you're gonna, like you said, if you're gonna cheat on your wife, I can't trust you, because obviously you're not a trustworthy person. I'm curious, with all of the people that you've interviewed, there's this whole concept of work-life balance, which is a little bit of a misnomer, I think, because it's very, very difficult to do that. It sounds like that you're a man that actually has this dialed in a little bit more than most, you know, that's just on the surface from what you're answering. You're talking to very high level men and women. And is this something where they tend to lean more towards balance or lean more towards being out of balance in order to be as successful as they are in the things that they're doing?
It's tough to, it's like, I just don't think, I don't think the work-life balance thing is black and white. I think it's pretty gray. I think there are moments of imbalance. A lot of the greatest things I've ever produced have come from those moments of imbalance. Like, for example, book writing or heavy preparation or for a speech or for a podcast. I'm not necessarily balanced at those times. With that said, there are times of the year where it's very important to walk my youngest daughter, Charlie, to the bus or get her off the bus or leave early when it's very warm here in Ohio to take her to the pool, right? So there are just, it's never fully perfectly balanced. There are just times when I try to be intentional about the fact that these years of them being kids in our home go fast. Yeah. And to just be very present and intentional about making sure I'm there for these moments. But there are other times when I have to travel or I have to be somewhere because part of my job is to support our family financially. And that I take that responsibility very seriously, just like my dad did. Like he traveled quite a bit. But do I ever remember him missing games or not being there? No, I remember him pretty much being there. Did he miss a practice or two during the week because he was work? Of course. Did he have to be places and take crazy flights to get home, red eyes, whatever? Yeah, I do the same thing. So I think I just think it's more about integration. It's more about the fact that there are times that you're not going to be balanced to be okay with that, to understand, to do excellent work. You got to put in excellent effort. And sometimes that takes away from other times. There's trade-offs at times. I think if your entire life, though, is a trade-off where you're putting your family or your spouse on the back burner, I mean, that is probably not going to go well for you. So to me, I just try, it's just about being thoughtful and intentional like everything else with okay, Charlie gets off the bus at 3:50. Well, I want to be there, right? Okay, the pools are open because it's hot here. Well, we're going, right? Throwing her up. Like those are the things that are really cool to do. Okay, we have volleyball tournament this weekend. How am I making sure I'm there? Soccer games, like whatever. Yeah, you got to say no. You got to walk away from some of these amazing opportunities from time to time to cash a check because your family's right there and you don't want to miss it. So I just think there's trade-offs. There's things to think about. It's a case-by-case situation. Knowing for the most part, though, that I am trying to build a great family life first and a great business second. And so from a priority perspective, that means, am I maximizing the growth of everything I do in my business and the revenue that I bring in? No, I'm trying to maximize my relationships with the most important people in my life first. And then second, I'm trying to do that. And that you prove that by the decisions you make. You prove that by saying no to a high ticket keynote speech, but it happens to be right in the middle of a volleyball tournament. So you can't go, right? These are real life things that I've dealt with. So I think like,
hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you're enjoying it and learning a lot. If you're looking for extra help, don't forget that I do offer one-on-one coaching. We can talk through a ton of different issues. I can give you guides, guidelines, and logistical help to help you take that next step or go to that next level in some of the things that you're dealing with in your life. We also have some course content, some guides, and a lot of educational materials over at maxedoutman.com. For the coaching, go ahead and go to maxedoutman.com/coaching. And you can learn about that. And then just go to maxedoutman.com for everything else. Thanks for joining us. Now back to the episode.
Those are things to think about. And it also then helps me design my work so that I don't have to necessarily be away as much. And I can do more of it like this. I try to do that as best I can. So there's trade-offs. It's about integration. It's about making choices. They're case-by-case basis. And it's also just knowing where your priorities lie and then having your actions prove what you say to be true. And I try to live up to that. Don't always do it right, but I try to do right as much as I can.
Yeah. So it's really purposeful imbalance, in the right ways. You know, something like you said, sometimes if you got a chapter to finish or your page, however you do your writing style, if you've got this to finish and deadlines, the family understands that you're going to be out of balance in that direction. However, they also understand that dad's going to be back, you know, re-engaged for pool time and bus time and volleyball tournaments and practices and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, they understand this stuff doesn't just happen. Like you got to make it happen. And so I think they get that when people ask me like, how do you do this? How do you write that book? Well, I mean, you sacrifice some things, right? Okay. And a lot of times I sacrifice sleep. That's not good. That is not a healthy thing long term. So you got to figure out how to make that up. You know, whatever it may be, it's just knowing that there are trade-offs for everything that we do. And we got to figure out how we're going to balance it as best we can. Because as you know, these years, like years are out of the house. Like these years are like, boom. And so it's like, don't waste them. I talk to parents who have kids that are out of the house. And like, that's the number one thing every single one of them says to me. They're like, dude, it's like, boom. It's like that. Don't wish those years away when you're stressed or you're the Uber driver for everybody or whatever. Like, cherish those moments. It's so important to be very present in there. And so I've been told that enough that I'm just trying my best, you know, to do that.
And are your parents actively involved in that, like trying to teach you and show you, you know, the things that they did, or you kind of feel like you're making it up as you go along, or just using them as an example? I had a terrible example growing up, so I've been kind of making this up as I've gone along and failed a ton with my kids, and continue to do so, and trying to navigate this adult life, you know, adult relationship with them. But I'm curious how you transition from, hey, this is a great model that I had, but then like it's kind of on the job training with children and marriage. And I mean, all this,
dude,
right?
We are all figuring out as we go. I have no idea what I'm doing. I try to learn. I try to talk to people who have done it before me. I see the model my parents set. So certainly very lucky. Presence again is so important. Being there, showing up, being a good listener, creating the environments for conversations to flow. I found when we go out to dinner one-on-one, sitting at the bar that we're side by side, we're, you know, looking forward at a TV, more conversation seems to flow than if we're sitting face to face, riding in cars together. All that's like really important times to be very intentional about one-on-one car rides, one-on-one trips, one-on-one dinners, walks also side by side. So all of these things create the environment for information and communication to flow back and forth. Just being trying to be a kind, supportive listener. Don't come down on them and say like, "What are you doing? That's idiotic." Well, I still do idiotic things, and I'm much older than them, so I got to expect them at times to be making bad choices. Hopefully, nothing that's going to like really mess up their life, but at times they're going to make poor choices, and they got to live with those choices. And so it's like not plowing the way, but being there, being supportive. That's like my dad. When people ask him like, "What'd you do?" You know, your boys grew up to do some pretty cool things. And he would say, well, you know, they know I'm always there. They know I'm supportive. But I also tried very hard to let them figure things out. Like, my parents never had a relationship with any of our sports coaches, ever. My coaches hardly even knew who they were. And we played sport. My brother played professionally for 11 years. He never knew anybody. They were there if needed. But if we had a dispute or an issue or a problem or we weren't getting playing time, we had to figure it out. It was on us. And that goes for basically everything, school, a boss, a coach, any issue was on us to figure it out. And I think that's changed a lot now. Mm-hmm. That seems like it's changed a lot. The second something is wrong, a parent is jumping in. It feels like in most cases, I'm trying to be there and supportive, but hey, you got to handle that with your coach. You got to handle that with your teacher. You got to figure that out. Like, this is on you. My job is to get them prepared to live without me. And so if I'm always there taking over or speaking up on their behalf, something as little as like when our daughters were even young, very young, they're going to order their food at dinner. Right. Mm. They're going to shake the hand and speak to the other adult. I'm not speaking for them. If they're asked a question, they're going to have to answer that question. I'm not going to speak up for them. I see that happening constantly where parents order for their kids, or they speak up for them, or they say, "Oh, Johnny wants this or that." And it's like, why don't we listen to see what Johnny says? So I'm trying to like create that environment where they got to be self-sufficient. They got to be tough. They got to stand up for themselves. They know I'm here as a support person, but really like they got to figure these things out, because that's the only way you're going to learn. And I obviously, like you said, I mess that up all the time too, but I'm just trying to be good at that, to help them be good without me.
Yeah. Cause that's, I mean, we live in the helicopter parent generation. I was reading a story just the other day where somebody, you know, a kid got fired from his job because he literally would not go to work. And after he got fired, the mom is calling his boss, begging him to take him back. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What are you teaching this kid? You know, and we deal with a lot of young parents because we do some marriage mentoring and those kind of things. And there's kind of this trend now to where, you know, and part of this is true. Every emotion matters. And I need to make sure I understand exactly how everybody's feeling at all times. And, you know, it's kind of the anti suck it up and move on movement kind of a thing. And like, there really is no, we're removing the ability to manage conflict because we're telling them how important every single, you know, struggle that they have is. It feels like to me, do you find conflict when you're like for your kids or with other parents, or maybe there's something, if you're like me, you don't really care about that, but is this something that creates a challenge for you because your parenting style is probably much different than a majority of other parents in their kids' lives?
I haven't had much conflict with parents or coaches. I mean, I don't personally go, sometimes coaches learn about what I do and they will seek me out and we'll have, I'm happy to have those conversations or other parents, but I don't outwardly share what I do with people. They'll have to find it themselves and then we'll have conversations. I haven't had much conflict. I think people sometimes ask for advice and I have no idea what to say. Volleyball coach, hey, what speech should I give? I don't know. I have no idea what speech to give to this high school volleyball team. I have no idea. I can share some things that I've learned about being a part of good teams. I don't know if that's helpful or not. But I haven't seen a ton of that. I think mostly, I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. I feel like our kids are, they have pretty, for the most part, pretty good friends with great parents. I mean, not 100%, but for the most part, people that I enjoy being around, that we have good conversations. Some of them have absolutely no idea what I do. They don't, because my daughters don't, most dads have like real jobs.
Right.
And so it's easy to say what their dad's real job is. Mine still don't fully know what to say. Oh, he's got a podcast. He writes books. He gives speeches. People are like, oh, really? Like, you can't really make money doing that. Well, they've never heard of me. They don't have any idea what I do. They don't understand. So in a way, sometimes it's just more funny. And then they'll stumble upon and maybe they'll go back and like, you have 500 some of these things. And then they listen. And it is kind of neat to see the conversations that form after that fact, because when I'm out in that environment with parents and stuff, my wife is much more engaging personality and a much more enjoyable person to be around. So I'm usually the quieter one who may be having a one-on-one conversation with somebody going deep, as opposed to being the life of the party. So they're maybe surprised at the fact of all the stuff that I do that involves talking and communicating and all of that when we meet in public. And my wife kind of runs the show because she's just got a much more electric personality, which is awesome. And I love it about her, but it's just different from mine when we're out in a setting like that.
Yeah. It's funny about the conversation that you're talking about with your kids. When my kids were growing up, one of my companies is a web development company. And we used to do, you know, major projects in database design. But one of our big projects was we created kind of a learning online gaming system. And this was kind of back in the day, but I remember a teacher asked my oldest, "What's your dad do for a living?" He plays video games on the computer all day. Because we were testing, you know, we're doing all this testing, but and even now as an entrepreneur, I have 10 different brands across 4 different businesses across like 7 different industries. And so when people ask me what I do for a living, I joke and I say, it would be easier for me just to make it up and tell you I'm a drug dealer, because then at least you will have some sort of context in order for me to explain what you do. And so I just tell people I sell stuff on the internet and I also have a podcast for men. You know, that's kind of my go-to. But yeah, but it's interesting that people will then seek you out for that advice to be able to speak into. And you're like me, I would much rather have a conversation with, you know, myself or another couple, and to be able to have that intimacy versus going to a huge party and kind of, you know, mingling and making those rounds. But hey, what are you, so if you took kind of the essence of leadership in relation to men being husbands and fathers, and I know this is kind of like you do huge keynote speeches on this, but if we're kind of going to boil it down, you talked about being present. What kind of, you know, what are these conversations look like if someone like me, first of all, I have a very difficult time with the team aspect of it. I'm kind of this DIY to my fault. I have a new business coach, and he was looking at everything that we do, and he's like, dude, you need a team of like four people. You can't do, you're not doing any of these things to excellence because you're trying to do everything yourself. So it's kind of the anti-leader or trying to lead myself. So I struggle with that. And I think a lot of men kind of struggle with this, you know, one man army mentality overall. But as men are trying to become better fathers, better husbands, better community leaders, better leaders in general, what kind of, how do you boil that down for someone that's wanting to kind of take that, even the first steps towards improvement in those areas?
I think your who is everything. You're going to become the people you choose to surround yourself with. So figuring out what that is, being intentional about the groups where you're hanging out. And I think trying to join groups where your desired behavior is their current behavior is a good start. James Clear said it to me when we recorded. And I think about that all the time, about how am I intentionally putting myself in the position to be, to level up, to be better, to find other growth focused leaders that are ahead of me and go talk to them, befriend them, add value to their lives. So hopefully we can build a real relationship. So I think if you're looking to get better, that's the first place I would start. It's my friend Brooke Cupp says, you know, you can't be tough alone. Most of us are better when we are lifted up by others. And everyone's got their own story and their own key learnings. And a friend of mine and member of my learning leader circle named Larry Seiler wrote this great post called Treat Everybody as Your Mentor. And he tells a story about him and his son in Washington, D.C., walking around. A homeless man spoke to them and just imparted some life wisdom to them that changed their life. And I think it's sometimes you might look at somebody like that and say, well, there's nothing I could learn from them. Well, I don't know. You might be wrong. So to me, treat everyone as your mentor, being very intentional about your who, joining groups where your desired behavior is their normal behavior, could lift you up, could push you beyond your current zone of comfort and competency. And, that's what I try to do. When sometimes I'm asked to do like a big leadership development program with a company that may take years. I mean, the first thing I'm thinking about is who are all the people that I've befriended that are better at this than me? They're going to be my team. I'm going to find a way. Like, we'll figure out the money. We'll figure out whatever we're going to do. I'm going to, and from that, not only will I better serve my client, but I'm going to learn a lot along the way. And I'm going to be teammates with people that I really look up to. And to me, that's been one of the coolest parts about this is somebody does seek out that from me because maybe they listened to the show for a long time or read books or all of the above. And now I'm getting to create teams of these amazing people to help me better serve others. That is awesome. So that's what I would probably start with is who is your who? And how are you intentionally putting yourself in the position to build meaningful, deep relationships with people who impress you? And doing people you admire, right? Not only for what they've accomplished, but in how they've accomplished what they've accomplished, right? With high integrity and ethics and all of that. So that's probably what I would start. And if you get that right, a lot of other things end up taking care of themselves because you're in the right arena. You're with the right people and it gives yourself the best chance for good things to happen.
Yeah. And I think that it's, this proves, and you prove all the time is that it doesn't necessarily have to be someone like that you go and see every day. There are other avenues in order to get this exposure, to get this learning. Obviously local friends are important. You know, you want to make sure that you have those relationships as well. And to your point about team, and being stronger together, I think about that log carry that the SEALs do during SEAL training. Basically they pick up this log that is literally, it takes however many guys, I can't remember. I think it's five or six guys that have to lift that up. Five guys can't carry it or four guys can't carry it. It takes the entire team to carry that load. And I think that that's something that we can take in our own. And I think a lot of men fail out. Like we really want to be this self-sufficient, tough kind of doing things on our own. At least I know that's true in my life. And to be able to seek out and learn from other people and to do those things at excellence. Well, hey, Ryan, I want to be respectful of your time. I'm very thankful that you took the opportunity or gave me the opportunity to sit and talk with you. This is awesome. And, you know, kind of helping to support, you know, somebody that's still learning along this journey for sure. And I'm going to take what we talked about today and actually try to integrate it and be better. So like you said, a year from now, I'll be like, man, that interview with Ryan Hawk sucked. I got to do better, you know, better this time. You know, that all of that, but hey, where do people find what you're doing? How do people learn more about what you've got going on? I'm going to, you know, I'm already subscribing to the podcast and I'll be listening more to that, but where do we learn more about what you got going on?
Learningleader.com. Home base for basically everything I do is at learningleader.com.
Okay. Perfect. Very, very good. Well, hey, thanks again for taking the time. I hope you have an awesome rest of your day. And I'm excited to kind of learn more about you from what you do and also the people that you talk to.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me.